Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, CFP, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. And you can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org. Good evening. Welcome to the show. Today is September 20th, 2017. The markets were mixed today. The Dow closing at 22,412, the NASDAQ at 6,456, and the S&P at 2,508. Our topic tonight discusses fiduciary roles. That's a word we've been hearing like crazy. It's actually a concept that's been around for a very, very long time. But I feel like the media, the investment world, the regulators, all of a sudden have made this word seem very important. So I thought we would talk about that, fiduciary, and what does that mean? We are live tonight. We'll take your questions. Lori C. is in the studio with us this evening. She'll answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic. I'll do my best to answer them, and we do not discuss specific investments. The number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. You can call in and talk live on air with me. If you're not comfortable talking live, you can just give your question to Lori. She'll write it down. She'll bring it into the studio, and I'll do my best to answer. Email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. And on both the WDIY.org website and the YourFinancialChoices.com website, we have prior shows. So if you ever miss a show or are interested in a particular topic, you can visit either website and look for the show titles that may be of interest to you, and you can listen to them online. Again, that's at WDIY.org under local programming, Your Financial Choices, or the website yourfinancialchoices.com. Tonight, I thought it was important to talk about the word fiduciary, as I mentioned. So first, let's talk about what it means and then discuss some of the roles that folks take on where they may not even realize that they've taken on the level of a fiduciary duty. And why I thought it was important to kind of talk about those concepts is because foremost in the news recently has been information about the DOL rule, the DOL fiduciary rule. DOL, number one, is the Department of Labor. The fiduciary rule is about investment advisors taking responsibility to a certain level that they may not have had before, when advising individuals on their retirement accounts, particularly individual retirement accounts, IRAs. So first, I want to talk about fiduciary because so many of us think it's someone else's responsibility. And I thought it might be interesting for listeners to realize you may have taken on roles or agreed to take on certain roles that require a fiduciary duty of yourself. So let's talk about what is a fiduciary. And for reference and just ease, I just quickly Googled fiduciary and up came investopedia.com, which is a website that has sometimes financial information. And this gave a pretty good summary of it. So I thought I would just share what they have. Essentially, a fiduciary is a person or organization that owes to another the duties of good faith and trust. Well, that certainly seems, and I'm going to go, you know, give my own commentary in between here as well, but that certainly sounds like something that's, what do you say, open to interpretation. The highest legal duty of one party to another, it also involves being bound ethically to act in the other's best interest. Ethically, there you go. There's another one of those words that one might think is open for interpretation. A fiduciary might be responsible for general well-being, but often it involves finances, managing the assets of another person or a group of people, for example. Money managers, bankers, accountants, executors, board members, and corporate officers can also be considered fiduciaries. And those are some of the roles that I think people may not realize their own responsibility. Executors could be trustees, board members. How many of our listeners may serve on a board? How many of you may be a corporate officer or serve as a director on a board? A fiduciary's responsibility or duties are both ethical and legal. When a party knowingly accepts a fiduciary duty on behalf of another party, he or she is required to act in the best interest of the principal. So there again, another word that's open for interpretation, best interest of the principal. So as I'm talking about this and we're explaining or defining what is a fiduciary, the common element here is there are a lot of words that may be open for interpretation. The reason I'm mentioning this, and it could end up being a bit of a caution, is that if you are accepting these kinds of roles, you really have an additional responsibility to make sure that you understand what someone else might think their best interest is if you're supposed to be acting in their best interest. What is ethical? What is good faith? What is trust? You know, the old golden rule, do unto others as you'd have them do unto you. Well, is that always the best standard as well? Because maybe you want someone to do unto you something not so ethical. I don't know. So you really want to make sure that if you're going to take on certain of these roles that we're going to be discussing, that you have a good idea of what they might mean. The fiduciary, I'm going on from Investopedia.com, the fiduciary is expected to manage, in this case, a financial duty, in this case for this fiduciary. Fiduciary is expected to manage the assets for the benefit of the other person rather than for his or her own profit and cannot benefit personally from their management of assets. This is what's known as a prudent person standard of care. And some of this goes back to old, you know, probably common law from way back. I'm not an attorney, so I'm not making an opinion or statement on that. I'm just kind of referencing. This formulation of the prudent person rule required that a person acting as a fiduciary was required to act first and foremost with the needs of the beneficiaries in mind. So strict care is taken to ensure no conflict of interest arises between the fiduciary and his principal. I think a good test of this might be if something doesn't, you know, feel right when they're leaving us open to so much interpretation of what is trust, what is best interest, what is ethical, and yet they also give us this standard of acting in the best interest of someone with the needs of the beneficiaries in mind. Documenting everything you're doing if you're serving in any of these roles. Again, making sure you're paying attention, taking notes, understanding what your role is to be and how you are to apply it. No conflict of interest. If something doesn't feel right, it might not be right. And I'm sure that there are people or other parties, if it's whether it's board members or an attorney or someone that you can discuss whether or not it makes sense for you to enter into this role, because you don't even probably want the appearance of having a conflict of interest when you're working in some of these roles. So we're coming up on our first break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about the types of fiduciary relationships. We're going to look at trustee beneficiary, executors and beneficiaries. We'll look at Fiduciary roles in attorney-client relationships, principal and agent. There we're talking typically about POAs and investment fiduciary. What I want to eventually lead to is having a little summary of what this DOL rule is about and whether or not it's going to apply to you and what you really think a fiduciary standard might be and who you might want to work with to make sure that they're abiding by that in your best interest. Folks, we are taking questions as well. We're live. The phone number is 610-758-8810. 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Do you have a car that you're trading in? How about an old truck or boat that's taking up space? Let WDIY help you get rid of unwanted vehicles and turn them into financial support for the station. It's a simple and easy process. We handle all the towing, title, and transfer, and you receive a tax deduction. Turn your vehicle into the programs you love on WDIY. To learn more, visit WDIY.org or call 610-694-8100, extension 7.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. We are talking about fiduciary roles here on Your Financial Choices. Fiduciary roles, what does the word mean? How do we interpret that? And what kind of roles might we take on as individuals? And what do we need to understand about that if we are going to serve as a fiduciary in some capacity? And what first comes to mind are many roles that I would say we don't always realize is in a fiduciary role. Executor, trustee, power of attorney, those are considered fiduciary roles. So while you might think it's only going to apply to investment advisors who have to navigate the rules of the Department of Labor fiduciary rule for your IRA, it actually could apply to you as well. So we want to make sure everyone understands. If you have questions, we are live on air. I love questions. Questions don't have to be about this. This is just, you know, a topic that I fill in between calls. So if you have questions about any topic, the phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. We can talk live on air or off air if you're not comfortable talking on air. And you can give your question to Lori. She'll write it down and bring it into the studio. And when I say any topic, I mean financial topic, of course. I'm not talking about cooking because that I do not do. I do cook or bake, though. I like to bake. So let's go back to where would we see certain fiduciary relationships? So if you are a corporate board member, a lot of times people will serve on nonprofit boards and not realize that they may be taking on a fiduciary role. If in that role, you might have some input in the investments that the nonprofit may be making or have or how they're spending their money. So it doesn't have to be just a for-profit corporation. It could be a nonprofit as well. So we have corporate board members and shareholders, executors, guardians, and wards. So you certainly should be acting in the best interest when you're in charge of someone's minor child, for example. Well, that takes on the role as a fiduciary. You will have a fiduciary duty to those charges that you have. Promoters and stock subscribers, not going to talk about that. Lawyers and clients, I'll just touch on that for a moment. And then investment corporation and investors. So let's start with the kind of one of the more basic ones, which would be a trustee and a beneficiary. So if you have a trust that you have set up, when you go to speak to your attorney to help you write your documents, the attorney will go through, of course, a list of questions, take an inventory of the assets and your estate needs, goals, wants, and what you are trying to accomplish with your estate planning, and if that means that a trust is involved, there will be specific language within that trust that will guide anyone that you put in charge of that trust as to management provisions, how they're to manage assets, invest, sell, buy, loan, what responsibility do they have to a beneficiary paying out principal or interest? Do they pay out the income? Do they not? When can they pay out the income? Do they have discretion? Are you not giving them discretion but saying instead, you know, you must pass out this income to maybe one or more beneficiaries? So an attorney is going to work with you first if you're interested in having a trust as part of your estate planning, help you write up that document, have all these duties included. And then, very importantly, not only are they going to ask you your beneficiaries, they're going to ask you, who do you want to be the trustee? So there are times where you will set up a trust and you will be the trustee during your lifetime. But then upon some event where you are no longer capable of serving as a trustee or you pass away, a successor trustee has to be named, or you may have a co-trustee. Sometimes spouses are co-trustees. Sometimes you will have a child who is a co-trustee with a parent. So you will work with the attorney to vet out those situations where you may need a particular trustee to step in at different times. So when you're doing that, one of the most important questions will be, do you have faith in that trustee that they will be able to read that document, interpret that document, and carry out your wishes according to that document in the best interest of the beneficiary and according to your wishes? Last week, I had attorney Charles Stopp on the show, and we talked about using trusts in estate planning and how powerful they can be, because often people think you cannot control from the grave, but you can sure try with a trust. And if you're not here and you have had to appoint someone to be a trustee when you're long gone, you certainly want to be able to trust that trustee enough that they will carry out your wishes. And that's one of those ways you can still control. But you have to have faith in that person. So that's where that fiduciary role is so important, and you want to make sure that anyone that you're going to choose to take on that role is going to act in the best interest of that beneficiary. So in this case, the individual named as a trust or estate trustee is that fiduciary, and the beneficiary's role is considered the principal. So they have a duty, the trustee has a duty of legal obligation to carry out that document, carry out the orders of the grantor or trustor who funded it, and make sure they're doing everything proper in the best interest. That gives the trustee the ability, the guidelines to make those decisions in the best interest of the beneficiary if it's kind of spelled out in some respects. But typically the management provisions do provide the trustee some flexibility as well. So when you're thinking about taking on this role, you want to make sure that that document is going to be flexible enough that if in the investment world changes, or you're going to be held responsible for certain investment decisions, you don't want a trust document to be so restrictive where someone says, hang on to this stock the rest of the beneficiary's life and you can't sell it kind of thing. So you just want to make sure that the language is flexible enough and you have some flexibility as well, so that you're not so tied in or held liable for some behavior that maybe the trust was kind of dictating a little bit. So that's why you want to work with an attorney to make sure that language is proper. And if you're asked to be a trustee for a trust, it doesn't hurt to probably run that by the attorney to fully understand your obligations as well. All right. So that is one role of a fiduciary, and probably one that we see kind of in the financial world quite a bit, and that is serving as a trustee. More likely, you may be asked to be an executor, and we'll talk about that, and it's very similar kind of role that the trustee had, that an executor might have, so we'll just go over that when we get back. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org. WDIY, Lehigh Valley's community NPR station.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. I just want to add that podcasts of prior shows are always available on WDIY.org under local programming, Your Financial Choices, or on the website, YourFinancialChoices.com. So two easy places to find podcasts from prior shows, topics that you may be interested in, and you can speed through them, do whatever you want. But where I think the real benefit is, if you enjoy the show and you have family members who are outside our listening area who can't catch it, it's a great way to either stream the show live online or listen to those shows that maybe you had listened to prior that you thought might be important for someone. And or if you didn't catch everything in one of the shows that we have covered, you can always go back and listen to a show and see what it was that you might have missed. Maybe you're in commuting and you were only able to catch the first 10 minutes. So that is available at yourfinancialchoices.com or WDIY.org. We're talking about fiduciary roles tonight. I just thought it was important for people to understand that they themselves may be acting in a fiduciary role in any number of instances. And it's not just investment advisors who take on that fiduciary role, which we have clients ask frequently, are you a fiduciary? Are you a fiduciary? Well, yes, but there are many circumstances where people are fiduciaries and don't realize it. So I think it's important to kind of make sense of it. So we talked about a trustee acting as a fiduciary over a trust, assets that have been put in the trust, and they have that document that they have to follow. We also have that happen with executors as well. So the executor is acting as a fiduciary as well in the best interest of the beneficiaries of that will and estate. So you definitely want to make sure if you are the person who is writing your will or trust document, getting your estate planning affairs in order, that you know that the individuals or corporate fiduciaries, which would be a trust company or a bank trust department, to serve as a corporate fiduciary. You can have individual fiduciaries that they're acting in the best interest of the beneficiaries to carry out the directives you've laid out in your will and or trust. And sometimes the trust is under the will as well. So I think you understand the fiduciary role of executor, trustee, or at least understand the concept that you are going to be held to a higher standard. You have to act in the best interest of the beneficiaries and not your best interest. And let me point out something. There might be cases where you are appointed these and you might have beneficiaries who don't say anything. Maybe they don't care. Maybe they're kind of quiet and they're just happy to get their check. But quite often you have beneficiaries who kind of are on you all the time and they want to make sure you're doing things right. Well, if you're of a disposition that you get overwhelmed by administrative duties, you get overwhelmed by financial decisions, if you get overwhelmed with emotion that when your loved one is incapacitated or passes away, that you just are frozen and you can't act, you might not be the best person for that role. And there is nothing wrong with saying, you know, I just don't know if I can do it. I don't know if I would be that person for you. Because when you take on this role, you may come under a microscope. If you have a beneficiary who's not happy with how you're managing an estate or trust and you're dragging your feet and you're taking too long, they may have recourse. So you want to make sure that you yourself, if you're asked to do this, that you're going in with full knowledge. Having said that, an attorney-client relationship is also a fiduciary relationship. So to go on with information from investopedia.com on what is a fiduciary and fiduciary roles, the attorney-client fiduciary relationship is arguably one of the most stringent. The U.S. Supreme Court states that the highest level of trust and confidence must exist between an attorney and his client, and that an attorney as fiduciary must act in complete fairness, loyalty, and fidelity in each representation of and dealing with clients. Attorneys are held liable for breaches of their fiduciary duties by the client and are accountable to the court in which that client is represented when a breach occurs. So you should feel confident and comfortable with an attorney that you're working with, knowing that they have this fiduciary standard in working with you. And if for any reason you get a sense that they don't, then that could be a flag, and you want to make sure that you're comfortable with whomever you're working. Typically, if an attorney is working with more than one member of a family, they may have a conflict of interest. Now, you might say, well, that fiduciary role, we should not have a conflict of interest if we're acting in the best interest of our beneficiary. But hey, mom and dad have used that attorney forever. We love them. We have a great relationship. They've done really well by mom and dad. It's not that the attorney can't work with you, and they just have to disclose if there's a conflict of interest or could be a conflict of interest. So occasionally you might hear about someone who, you know, is going to go sue some company, and you call an attorney and you say, hey, attorney, will you represent me in this suit I have against ABC? Well, the attorney may not be able to answer right away because they actually have to go check their books to see if they may already be representing company ABC, because if they are, then they would have a conflict of interest and would not be able to represent you in a suit against, you know, company ABC, for example. And I'm kind of giving you a broad picture. But when there's family members, as long as you would understand and agree that you would not hold them, you know, that you understand that there could be a conflict of interest, then they still may be able to work with you. So I don't want folks to confuse sometimes conflict of interest. And what I mean by that is you might have a husband and wife who have an attorney, and maybe the husband goes to the attorney and says, hey, I have $1 million in a bank account I'm keeping separate from my wife because I don't want her to know about it, and I'm keeping it for my girlfriend. Well, then if the wife goes to work with the attorney and says, hey, attorney, I want to work with you on some documents, and, you know, I have a feeling that my husband might have some money on the side. Well, if the attorney knows something, there may be a conflict of interest. So you want to watch to see if they're sensitive to that and if they can disclose that. There might be a conflict of interest if maybe an attorney writes up a document for mom and dad and there's three kids and maybe one of the kids is cut out of the will, and that one who's cut out of the will goes to the attorney thinking, oh, they can maybe give them a little information so they kind of know what they're getting from mom and dad. they're not going to disclose that. So you have to be sensitive to certain positions that you may be putting your advisors in, and understand if your advisors cannot disclose certain information because they have a fiduciary duty to their clients and have to have that highest level of trust and acting in the best interest of them. All right. When we come back, we'll briefly talk about a principal agent and then what it means to be investment fiduciary, a little bit on suitability versus fiduciary standards, which come into play when we talk about that DOL rule, Department of Labor rule. And then we'll give a few more examples and talk about DOL if I have time. Folks, if you have questions, phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
This is WDIY. It's 30 minutes past 6 o'clock. Your current temperature is 81. Tonight, partly cloudy with a low around 63. Thursday, sunny with the high near 83. Thursday night, mostly clear with a low around 59. Friday, mostly sunny with the high near 82. Friday night, partly cloudy with a low around 60. Saturday, mostly sunny with a high near 85. Saturday night, mostly clear with a low around 63. And Sunday, sunny with a high near 87. Now, back to your financial choices with Lori Siebert.
Welcome back, folks. We are talking about fiduciary roles, fiduciary duty. I know it's maybe a topic you think might not apply when we're talking about your financial choices. And we talk about financial choices for ourselves, but it really, really does apply if part of your choices are, number one, asking people to be a fiduciary for you in the roles of trustee, successor trustee, co-trustee, executor, power of attorney, and of course your financial choices when someone's asking you to serve in those roles. The principal agent, basically, you know, power of attorney, you're asking someone to kind of stand in your shoes. And let me tell you, that is a really, really, really big responsibility, because that's while you're alive. You know, sometimes once you're gone, maybe you don't care anymore. Obviously, what happens, your survivors might care, but you're gone, so maybe no big deal. But to have someone serve as your power of attorney while you're alive, that is real power, because that could really make a difference in your overall well-being if your money's all gone because your power of attorney, you know, emptied out your bank accounts while you were in the hospital. Of course, you know, that would be a problem, obviously. And but at the same time, what if you're incapacitated completely and you never come out of it? You don't know. You might not know what's happening, what your power of attorney is doing. Maybe you meant for all of your money to go to charity, but while you're there sitting incapacitated, your power of attorney is writing checks to him or herself to pay for their, I don't know, management, administration of your estate, and maybe doing something unreasonably. We don't know. I don't know. I don't know if, you know, what kind of cases have been out there. I'm not an attorney. These are the kinds of discussions you have with your attorney. Do you need to worry about it? That's why it's so important to pick out people that are going to be competent. And just because they're your best friend or they're your only sister, it does not mean that they are the person that's best equipped to serve as your power of attorney or trustee or executor or whatever it is. You really want to think that through. And what a lot of people might not realize is you can name a friend, maybe. Maybe you have a friend who's really financially savvy, but you want to name your sister as the trustee and guardian of your minor children. Well, you can separate those duties. So that's something that people don't often think about as well. So power of attorney, very important. Lots of power with the power of attorney. Investment fiduciary, and again, this is from Investopedia. Let me just read this quickly. While it may seem as if an investment fiduciary would be a financial professional, such as a money manager or banker, an investment fiduciary is any person who has the legal responsibility for managing somebody else's money. That means if you volunteered to sit on an investment committee of the board of your local charity or other organization, you have a fiduciary responsibility too. And that is one area where I think people may not realize when they accept those roles. So you really want to be careful. You've been placed in a position of trust, and there may be consequences for betrayal of that trust. Hiring a financial or investment expert does not relieve the committee members of all of their duties. They still have an obligation to prudently select and monitor the activities of the expert. So I'll just give you an example. I was on an endowment council of the church I belonged to for many years, and it made me quite nervous when I first was asked to be on the endowment council because I thought, you know, I'm an investment advisor and I, you know, don't want any conflict of interest here. And I realized that they really needed an investment policy statement. We really needed to hire outside professionals. I just thought that could be appear or come as a conflict. Of course, I mean, I did not do any investments at all. It was just kind of overseeing things. And so what we ended up coming up with, and we spent some time on, was coming up with an investment policy. And then we interviewed several money managers to come in and help the endowment council with the money management of the funds that they had. So when we talk about a fiduciary responsibility, we wanted to make sure, number one, that we had guidelines and that we had worked through those guidelines very, very diligently. And number two, that we had interviewed several money managers and we had criteria we were watching. So while in this case, it said it doesn't relieve you always of your fiduciary responsibility because you're a committee member, at least you're taking all the steps to show that you're acting in the best interest of that beneficiary or delegate that you're kind of overseeing or monitoring for in your position as a fiduciary. And you're taking all those steps. So quite often, you know, when we talk about these general words that I mentioned at the beginning, acting with, good faith, best interest, ethically, while there's not necessarily an exact definition of what that might mean, there was also a word called prudent care, prudent investor. So when you could show that you've taken action steps to do everything the right way, chances are you're not going to get in, or you hope to avoid trouble when you've taken due care and done all of these kinds of steps. So that's something to keep in mind if you plan on taking any of these roles. We had Dave call from Albrightsville, and he asked, when you ask a financial advisor to be your fiduciary, should you get it in writing? Dave, that's interesting, and that's a good question because I've not seen it worded that way, that you ask your advisor to be a fiduciary. Typically, Dave, what happens when we talk about the fiduciary role of an investment advisor, what you're usually looking at are two different kinds of investment advisors. You have investment advisors who fall under the SEC regulations, and they are registered investment advisory firms, or RIAs, registered investment advisory firms or individuals, RIA. They fall under SEC regulation. They serve as fiduciaries. They are acting in your best interest. Then you have investment advisors. Now, remember, I just said investment advisor twice. You can have investment advisors who are fiduciaries under the RIA, or an investment advisor that may be a broker, which falls under FINRA, so a licensed broker, which is more on a commission basis. On the RIA side, it's fee-based. So the RIA side is the fiduciary side. They're acting in your best interest. What does that mean? The best interest is they have communicated to you a fee or hourly fee that they're going to charge based on assets managed, and what investment they're making for you does not matter as to the fee. So if I am an RIA and I manage $100,000 for you and I tell you I'm going to charge 1%, the investments, the underlying investments that I'm managing should not also be paying me. So I am not getting extra incentive by buying particular products. Those are the kind of the keywords you hear in the investment world on the commission side. You've disclosed the fees. You understand what the fee arrangement is. On the broker-dealer side, I could sell you an investment of $100,000 and get a commission on it. And maybe depending on what I sell you, I could get more of a commission. So perhaps on the RIA side, I might manage your assets, charge you 1%. On the broker-dealer side, I might sell you an investment or an annuity or something like that that might pay me 5% or 6%. It depends. It depends on what they're selling you. The measure on the broker-dealer side, the commission side, is we just have to make sure that it's suitable. That's different than the fiduciary side, where we're acting in your best interest. So let's go there. Let's talk about suitability versus fiduciary standards in light of Dave's questions. When you ask a financial advisor to be your fiduciary, should you get it in writing? If they are with an RIA firm, they should be your fiduciary. Typically, CFPs, certified financial planners, should be acting in a fiduciary role. You may have CFPs who are also have their broker license. Just because they have their broker license doesn't mean that they're going to be selling you commissioned products. But you would want to make sure that if they're going to do that, that that's all disclosed. And are they acting in your best interest, or are they only making sure it's suitable? There is a different standard. Typically, CFPs have a code of ethics. You could ask for that code of ethics, and you could ask for their ADV, which is a brochure that's required under SEC regulations to be provided to a potential or to an investor when they are coming on board. When you're going to work with a financial advisor from the RIA side, they're required to give you this ADV brochure, which will explain their fees and the services that you'll get. But when you're on that RIA side, typically fiduciary. So you shouldn't have to ask them to be the fiduciary. They would be the fiduciary. And you want to make sure that you are clear with them that that is what you want, and in case they are also licensed on the broker side. So a lot of people are both RIA and broker, and you just want to make sure which side of the fence you're working on with them. And also, as I said, CFP professionals also have a fiduciary role. You want to make sure that it's applicable on your engagement with them. Good question and perfect timing. So let me go to suitability versus fiduciary standards. So if your investment advisor is, this is again Investopedia, it kind of sums it up a little bit more clearly than I may have just now. If your investment advisor is a registered investment advisor, he or she does share fiduciary responsibility. On the other hand, a broker who works for a broker dealer may not. Some brokerage firms don't want or allow their brokers to be fiduciaries. So that comes into play with this whole big brouhaha with the DOL fiduciary role and how they're trying to postpone because there are a lot of brokers out there right now who are on the commission side And if their brokerage firm won't allow them to be a fiduciary and the regulations are going to require investment advisors to be fiduciaries when they're giving advice in IRAs, and you have broker-dealers who aren't allowing their people to be fiduciaries, we have all of a sudden a whole bunch of brokers out there who cannot manage, because they're not managing, they're investing, IRAs for people. Takes away a lot of business from those brokers. So that is one of the big brouhahas. It also raises, of course, the compliance for all advisors, whether you're an RIA firm or broker-dealer. Any additional regulation does kind of raise the cost of compliance and hiring staff to make sure people are doing the right things. So there's that big question about the DOL fiduciary rule now, but it has been postponed. But we're going to talk a little bit more about suitability versus fiduciary and why it might make a difference for you. Phone number, folks, 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
In 2017, WDIY is celebrating 22 years on the air. If you listen to WDIY, support the station by becoming a member today. Members are our most reliable source of support. We couldn't be here without you. To become a member, visit wdiy.org or call 610-694-8100. WDIY, serving the Lehigh Valley and beyond.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert, and you're listening to Your Financial Choices. We're coming up on the last 14 minutes of the show. We're talking about fiduciary. And this, I want to mention, I said that RIA firms regulated by the SEC, there actually might be some state securities regulators if the assets under management with the firm are under, I believe they raised it, I think it's under 100 million now, then you fall under the state regulators. But basically that act, the Investment Advisors Act of 1940, kind of establishes that fiduciary standard, and they define it to stipulate a duty of loyalty and care, which simply means that the advisor must put their client's interest above their own. And I think that's important. It also means that the advisor must do his or her best to make sure investment advice is using accurate and complete information, or basically that the analysis is thorough and as accurate as possible. Avoiding conflicts of interest is important when acting as a fiduciary. So the suitability rule, so kind of understand that. Someone's supposed to be acting in your best interest. The suitability rule, the broker-dealers who are often compensated by commission generally only have to fulfill a suitability obligation, which is defined as making recommendations that are consistent with the best interest of the underlying customer. Broker-dealers are regulated by FINRA, the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority, under standards that require them to make suitable recommendations to their clients. A key distinction in terms of loyalty is also important in that a broker's duty is to the broker-dealer he or she works for, not necessarily the client served. Under suitability requirement, this as long as the investment is suitable for the client, it can be purchased for the client. So this can incentivize brokers to sell their own products ahead of competing products that may be at a lower cost. And that's something I see where folks will come in and they might have a investment account from ABC Financial Services firm. And when you look at the underlying investments that are held there, they may be ABC kind of investments. And that is called proprietary funds. So those proprietary funds While you might be paying a commission to the broker, by use of those proprietary funds, sometimes the ABC financial firm may also benefit beyond just those standard commissions, because sometimes there's underlying expenses in a fund, underlying loads or what do I want to say, administrative expenses that end up going back to the investment firm that put together that investment product for that broker to sell. So it's kind of like a win-win type of thing. So that is under the suitability rule. As long as that investment was suitable for that client, that still could be okay. Now, if I worked at ABC Investment Company and we had a fund called ABC something, and I knew I could get a fee for selling ABC fund and my firm would get some money from ABC fund, they're going to love me if I do that. But deep down, I know that's not really the best investment for that client. Maybe we know that they need to get out of it in 6 months. And if they get out of it in 6 months, we know there's going to be a charge for it. So there's lots of other considerations around the investments we make. The fiduciary standard will, I would expect, hold that investment advisor to a higher standard in knowing the client and knowing what's best for them, acting in their best interest without a conflict of interest, than that broker-dealer would be held to. So therein lies the little problem with the DOL rule, in that many investment advisors still to this day are broker-dealers or brokers. But there's been a huge, I would say, exodus of broker-dealers into the RIA side of the business. We're seeing a lot more firms who are doing asset management. Asset management, again, on the RIA side, might say, it doesn't matter what I'm investing in as far as how I get paid. I'm just taking a fee on the assets that I'm managing. And in that way, I could look for the lowest cost investments that might meet your criteria, your risk tolerance, and, you know, all the other boxes you have to check to make sure that it's in the best interest of the client, their timeline, their age, their, you know, how they can sleep at night, depending on what kind of investments they're in. So that is the fiduciary standard. So let me talk a minute about this. I was going to talk about the DOL rule real quick, and then I'll see if I can talk about some of the other duties that may kind of fall under fiduciary duty if I have a few minutes. So the DOL fiduciary rule, this was also on Investopedia, which was explained as of August 31st, 2017, where they mentioned the Department of Labor fiduciary rule is a new ruling originally scheduled to be phased in April 10th, 2017 through January 1st, 2018, but it was delayed until January 9th, including a transition period for the application of certain exemptions to the rule, extending through January 1st, 2018. But full implementation of all elements of the rule has been pushed back to July 1st, 2019. The rule expands the investment advice fiduciary definition under the Employee Retirement Income Security Act, which is ERISA. And ERISA typically offers the guidelines for qualified plans, being 401ks, 403bs, employer type of plans. But it seemed that this rule kind of went even a little bit further in trying to have it apply to individual retirement accounts as well. So the legislation automatically elevates all financial professionals who work with retirement plans or provide retirement planning advice to the level of a fiduciary, bound legally and ethically to meet the standards of that status. While the new rules are likely to have at least some impact on all financial advisors, it is expected that those who work on commission, such as brokers and insurance agents, will be impacted the most. So that's why there was the big brouhaha and kind of pressure on the broker-dealer side to squash this legislation from going through. For many financial advisors, it didn't matter because they were already fiduciaries, acting as fiduciaries in the best interest of their clients, typically those on the RIA side of the business. But it's interesting because I think that people don't understand what that fiduciary standard, who it actually applies to. I found it quite interesting that there is that much confusion about it, even after it's been in the news for, you know, a couple of years now, as it would apply to this, and how many individuals, investors, don't understand what kind of advisor they're working with. So I think that is very, very important. One of the biggest takeaways of the show tonight is not only understanding when the fiduciary rule may apply to you in the roles that you decide to accept, agree to, take on, whether it's as a power of attorney for someone, trustee for someone, executor for someone, or if you're willing to serve on a board. And I'm not trying to deter anyone from doing that. It's wonderful to be such a trusted person in any of these roles, and whether it's a family member or a friend, whether it's an organization that you really, really support and would like to see advance and you want to take an active role on a board. I don't want to deter anyone. I just want to make sure that people understand that that fiduciary role just isn't some mythical thing out there for investment advisors, and because it could apply to yourself as well. So when you say, yes, I'll do something, are you actually going to be able to do it and carry out the duties that you need to, based on whatever term someone may have laid out for you in any of those documents? And then, having said that, make sure that you can identify when there are people out there who are supposed to be acting in a fiduciary role for you. When you're picking that trustee, when you're picking that executor, power of attorney, when you're picking that attorney to work with, are they acting in a fiduciary role with you? Are there any flags? Are you understanding the roles? Have they laid out that role for you? But then again, very importantly, when you're working with a financial advisor, do you understand what capacity they're working in? Are they a broker? Are they selling you commission-based products, whether it's an annuity, a life insurance policy, a mutual fund, a stock, an individual stock, ETF? What kind of commissions might they be taking? Do you understand that? If they are, if they are not, might you actually be working with a financial advisor who puts themselves out there as a fiduciary under the umbrella of the RIA side of the business? All right. From Cornell Law School, there were some other concepts that they talked about under the fiduciary duty, and I just thought these were kind of nice. They sound nice. Duty of care, duty of loyalty, duty of good faith. So what happens is there certainly are some general guidelines depending on what role someone might be taking. There may be federal guidelines, but there might also be state guidelines. So you also want to make sure that if you've taken on a role in a particular state, does the same kind of concept and responsibilities apply in another state? If maybe a sibling is asking you to be a trustee of a Utah trust or something like that. So be careful, because some courts have imposed additional duties, those including duty of good faith, duty of confidentiality, duty of prudence, duty of disclosure. So make sure wherever it is you are acting in any of those capacities that you understand what you're taking on. And of course, confidential relations. You want to make sure that you're keeping any information confidential. And if you feel for any reason that you wouldn't be able to do that, you better make sure that whoever you're asking, or whoever is asking you to serve in those roles, you need to disclose if you think there ever might be a problem. Disclosure always works. I think that helps a lot. Just be full open. Folks, I hope that you learned a little bit tonight. I hope I have dispelled some of the confusion around fiduciary, that word that we hear all the time now, and that you have a little bit better concept of what it is and the importance of it, not just for those that you're expecting it of, but of yourself if you take on those roles for others. Make sure you understand it on both sides. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. So I want to thank the listeners tonight. Thank our caller, one caller, Dave, for calling in. Next week, I'm going to talk about important ages. I've done this before. I find it really kind of cool and interesting because a listener who listened 5 years ago may not have thought it was important to know these ages. And now they're 5 years later. And now all of a sudden these ages really make a difference. So we're going to talk about important ages. Are you there yet? You know, what happens at 55? What happens at 59 and a half? What happens at 70 and a half? So we're going to talk about some of those. Thank you, Shandi, for being here. Thank you, Lori, for being here. Coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller with In the Tradition Folk Music. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive, and make the best of your financial choices. Have a great week.